Because that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wednesday, May the 3rd edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, apparently there were a lot of people who were against this Kroger Field naming debacle. The Kentucky Derby is this Saturday, in case you've forgotten. The Reds lose a stinker. The NBA playoffs continue. One Cincinnati TV station is already boycotting the Bengals for their draft pick. Is there magic in the number 15 at Florida? And we pick another NBA game tonight using our zigzag theory. So let's go.
You are listening live.
Story today in the Herald Leader about Kroger Field and how several students and faculty were opposed to this idea. But the bottom line is, if the school's going to get $22 million for it, you can raise Cain, you can write letters, you can get an angry mob with pitchforks and torches, and it won't matter. $22 million is $22 million. Something tells me that these students and faculty that were opposed to the renaming of Kroger Field are the same people that thinks that college athletics, especially on the level that Kentucky plays, that all college athletics are played by student athletes who take no money and it's for the love of the game. And if that's the world that they live in, and if that's the world that you live in, I've got news for you. That's not how it's done, baby. It's all about money. If you don't think that high-level college football and high-level college basketball aren't professional sports, then you don't get it, because I can promise you, they are. And if Kroger is dishing out $22 million just to get a college football field named after it, then you can't see the forest for the trees. College sports are all about one thing and one thing only, money. And there's only two sports that make money, football, men's basketball. So all you people who were objecting to the name change of the stadium, go back and put on your little sweater with your little elbow patches on it. Go pack your little corn cob pipe full of tobacco. Light it up while you sit next to the fireplace and listen to the radio, because that's the day and age you're living in. God bless you for living in your little naive world, but college football, especially the SEC, is a big business, and you've got to have money to run that business.
Hey, don't be upset with her. She did the same thing that anybody else in her position would have done. She did the same thing that you would have done. She had her price, just like each and every one of you have your price. Everybody's got a price for the million-dollar man.
I was reading something else this morning saying that numerous Kentucky football players will be drafted in next year's NFL draft. Okay, good for them. They were supposed to have numerous picks this year too, but they didn't, did they? Oh, and by the way, the last number one draft pick at Kentucky was Bud Dupree of the Steelers a couple of years ago. And let me just tell you how this works. The last year of Bud Dupree at UK, Kentucky ranked 88th nationally in defense. The year after he left, they ranked 89th nationally in defense. There was no change. Oh, and the same year that Bud Dupree left, then another defensive player drafted in the fourth round. The names can change. The names can go pro. But the results, for the most part, have stayed the same. Draft picks or no.
And that's the way you gotta do it. You go out there, you tear their fucking heads off, and you shit down their necks. Let us break.
We're entering a time sports-wise in this area where there's nothing to talk about locally in terms of UK, in terms of anything going on in Lexington or the surrounding area. So of course the media, they're gonna have to come up with stuff to write about. For instance, today the Courier-Journal comes out with a headline of a story saying, why you shouldn't forget about Wenyen Gabriel. Well, first of all, the last time I saw Wenyen Gabriel was in the month of March in the Elite Eight game when he only played 2 minutes in the last game. That told me a lot of what Calipari thought of him. But I'm going to forget about Wenyen Gabriel for the next 6 months because college basketball doesn't begin for another 6 months. So why should I have to think about this guy all summer long? Why you shouldn't forget about Wenyen Gabriel. Oh, I've already forgotten about him. And I won't be reminded of him again until November. Speaking of November, Hamidou Diallo, who may or may not be in the NBA draft, we don't know yet, but according to his high school coach, he's going to go back to Kentucky next season. Meh, I'll believe that when I see it. But for now, all this speculation is ridiculous. I say if he wants to go pro, let him go. Why should anybody in the Big Blue Nation be pissed off at him? But apparently they are. I don't get that. But if he's got a guarantee to go in the first round, he should go, whether he goes number one or number 30. There's an article in the Herald Leader today also about John Calipari going to talk to 2 5-star recruits that play on the same team in New Jersey. So wait a minute, when will they be coming to Kentucky? This coming fall? No. Oh, well, I guess next fall. Fall of 2018. No. Calipari's going to talk to these kids who would not be setting foot on UK's campus as a student until the fall of 2019. So they wouldn't set foot on the court at Rupp Arena for a competitive game for 30 months. 30 months away, ladies and gentlemen. And the local media is talking about Calipari recruiting these kids. That's how you know you've lost perspective. And that's how you know you've got nothing to talk about around here when you're talking about 2 5-star recruits who wouldn't put on a Kentucky jersey for 30 months. Perspective. There's a lot of people around here that need that.
The only person that would be interested in this match is the kind of guy that would think a six-pack of beer and a bug zapper is quality entertainment.
One thing that will save us locally this week, the Kentucky Derby will have their drawing for post positions today. Now, I don't consider myself a horse racing expert at all, but here's what I do know about the Derby. One of the trainers got kidnapped at one time. One of the horses running in the Derby was orphaned, an orphaned colt, whatever that means. And one of the horses doesn't have one of his eyes and has to wear an eye patch, making him the most successful person wearing an eye patch since Steve Johnson from Days of Our Lives from back in the day, when I literally would schedule my classes around watching Days of Our Lives in the afternoon. But I digress. So until we see odds and who's running for what post position, blah, 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 I can't tell you anything about the Derby. And to be honest, I'm no horse racing expert. So good luck to you picking your superfectas this weekend. It looks like it's going to be cold. So all of you who are actually going to the Derby, good luck. More than likely, if you're listening to this show, you're doing the drive-through wagering at Keeneland day of. Those are my kind of people.
Stay tuned for all the excitement of the world champion Cincinnati Reds. Reds Radio is produced solely by the broadcast department of the Cincinnati Reds Incorporated.
The Reds lost a miserable game last night, 12-3 to the Pirates. It started out very well. Tyler Glasnow started the game by walking the first two batters for the Reds, and then the third batter, Joey Votto, hit a home run. So, 3 batters and 3 runs for the Reds. Easy money, right? Well, no. After that, in the next 9 innings, the Reds had 0 runs and only 3 hits. Glasnow, his first quality start of the season, he and Wade LeBlanc, shut out the Reds over the next 9. That's the Pirates' first win over the Reds in 5 chances this year. And the Reds, now showing who they really are, have now lost 9 of 12. Scott Feldman, showing why he's Scott Feldman, 4 innings, 7 runs, 4.83 ERA on the year now. Robert Stevenson, who I honestly can't figure out why he's still on the major league roster. He should be in the minor leagues. 2 2/3, 4 runs, his ERA, 9.69. Billy Hamilton, 2 more stolen bases, the major league leader with 15. That's the good news. He did get an opening walk last night. That's only his 8th walk of the year. Otherwise, no hits, batting average, 214. On base percentage, 268. Terrible. But it's not all his fault. The starting pitchers for the Reds, their combined ERA this year, 6.09. That's the worst in Major League Baseball, and it's not even close. The next to worst team in Major League Baseball in terms of starting pitching ERA is Cleveland. Their ERA, 5.27. That's almost a full run less than the Reds. And in the National League, the second worst starting pitcher ERA belongs to the Marlins, 4.95. That's over a run worse than the Reds. So it's very clear to see what's wrong with the Reds. First and foremost, starting pitching. And let's just be honest, when your opening day starter was Scott Feldman, that should have been a red flag right there. Pirates and Reds again, game 3 of their 4-game series tonight. Both teams come in at 12-14. Jameson Taillon for the Pirates tonight, 2.08. He's a good pitcher. Rookie Davis for the Reds tonight, 11.17. He's not a good pitcher. Pirates minus 130. If you ask me, it should be more. Reds plus 120. But this is a decent spot for the Reds. The Pirates have only been a favorite on the road once this year. They lost that game. While when the Reds are a dog, they're 10-9 on the year. Both these pitchers matched up against each other on April 11th. Rookie Davis had easily his best game of the year, but he only went 4 innings, allowing 1 run. Tyon went 6 innings, allowed 2 runs. Joey Votto not very good against Tyon, 1-for-8 career. And the Reds have to do something with Josh Harrison of the Pirates, who has 3 home runs in the first 2 games of this series. And oh, by the way, he's actually from Cincinnati. There's a little bit of value on the Reds tonight, getting plus 120. But if you look at those starting pitchers, there's no comparison. Tyon is much better than rookie Davis, so I wouldn't touch this game with a 10-foot pole. In other words, you're on your own.
So the Tribe drops its third straight on this trip, 6-1 to the Rangers. For the Indians, 1 run on, let's see, 1 hit. That's all we got. 1 damn hit.
You can't say damn on the air.
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
Other Major League Baseball last night. Interesting game in Boston last night. We talked yesterday about Adam Jones being harassed by racial slurs during games. And in his first at-bat last night, the Fenway Park fans gave him a standing ovation. And in fact, opposing pitcher Chris Sale stepped off the back of the mound and tipped his hat to let the fans applaud. Oh, so Chris Sale's a nice guy, huh? Well, flash forward to when Manny Machado comes to the plate and he throws right at his head. And of course, Manny Machado reacts by hitting a home run. And then after the game, Manny Machado dropped several F-bombs towards the Boston Red Sox for throwing at him, even though the kid has hit home runs 2 nights in a row. The Orioles are no saints in this because they threw at the Red Sox hotshot rookie Andrew Benintendi, and they even turned a triple play themselves. But the Red Sox and Chris Sale, quite possibly the AL Cy Young Award winner at this point, win the game. But all anybody can talk about is the fact that Manny Machado is getting thrown at every game, and the Red Sox fans do nothing but hurl racial slurs at African-American players. Just another night in Boston.
Look at me, I'm Whitey Ford!
Huh?
There's a new Major League home run leader, Eric Thames, who hasn't hit a home run in 6 games now. Boy, those drug tests must really be getting to him. Has been passed by the Yankees' Aaron Judge, who not only hit 2 home runs in the game last night, but hit one so far in batting practice that he took out a television that's located in the left field concourse. Judge now with 12 home runs on pace for 78. This kid is 6'7", 282 pounds. Of course he's a home run hitter, and he wears uniform number 99. Partly because he's just huge, and another reason is because the Yankees have retired so many numbers that half their players have to wear numbers that make them look like they're in spring training and about to go down to AA. But my question is this, where's the drug test for Aaron Judge? They made Eric Thames take 2 in the month of April. I bet Aaron Judge hasn't had to have a drug test yet, has he? I wonder why. Huh. I think if you listen to this show, you know exactly what my answer would be, but I'll digress.
Haley Spark, I need you. Ralph can't play because he's too juiced.
I didn't know what I was putting into my body.
In a follow-up to something we got to yesterday, Carlos Martinez, the Cardinals' ace, using that term very loosely this year, the Cardinals have not been very good, removed his hair extensions, and then last night went out and threw 7 innings, allowing 0 earned runs and getting the win over the Brewers. And the stats came up after the game with his hair extensions in. His ERA was 6.33, and without his hair extensions in 2 starts, his ERA is 0. Something tells me he'll be pitching the rest of the season with his natural hair.
All right, Vaughn, they tell us you're a pitcher. You're sure not much of a dresser. We wear caps and sleeves at this level, son. Understood?
You've heard of the curse of the Billy Goat. You've heard of the curse of Bartman. You've heard the ball going through Leon Durham's legs in 1984 that broke my heart. Now the Chicago Cubs have broken their World Series trophy that they won last year for the first time in 108 years. And how did they do that? Theo Epstein body surfing at a benefit concert in which Pearl Jam's Eddie Vedder was the star. And oh, by the way, this all happened in Boston. The irony of all this is incredible, to say the least. Needless to say, the Cubs are doing a great job jinxing themselves to where they'll never win another World Series for another 108 years, but I digress.
This is the kind of thing, quite honestly, right now, that makes you want to see the Chicago Cubs team lose. But far and away, the most obnoxious fans in baseball in this league are those who follow this team right here. It's unbelievable. You know, I've said all winter, they talk about this team winning the division, and my comment is they won't win it because at the end of the day, they still are the Chicago Cubs, and they will figure out a way to screw this whole thing up.
In 1981, there was a television show that started coming on Saturday mornings called The Baseball Bunch, and it was hosted by the venerable Johnny Bench. And of course, Johnny Bench was the manager, the bunch of kids were the little team, and they played baseball all the time. It was as corny and as lousy as you could imagine. The San Diego Chicken was on there, and by the way, the San Diego Chicken was a thing back then. And they talked to someone called the Dugout Wizard, who was Tommy Lasorda on a television set, with a bunch of smoke wearing one of those fortune teller outfits. I remember watching it when I was a kid and wondering how lame could this be, and I was a child. Somehow, someway, that show lasted for 5 seasons. Apparently Johnny Bench needed the money. And they would have Major League Baseball players who would appear on the show and show kids how to hit and how to pitch and how to field, blah, 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 blah. It was a terribly lousy show. But if you really want some cheesy cornball stuff that related to baseball, go YouTube it, because it is all over YouTube. It's a terrible show. But the bottom line of this was, it was a lame concept with Johnny Bench knowing he was at the end of the line trying to cash in one last paycheck before he went away. But if you're someone in your late 30s or older, you probably remember this show and how horrible it really was. NBA! The NBA playoffs continue last night. Isaiah Thomas, 53 points as the Celtics win by 10 in overtime, somehow covering the spread, unfortunately, as the Wizards seem to have control of that game until the end. Apparently, Floyd Money Mayweather made a lot of money off that game as he was pictured on an airplane, in an airplane seat, with stacks of $100 bills, claiming that he won all that money by betting on Isaiah Thomas last night. You ever notice that Money Mayweather brags a lot on social media about all these bets that he wins, but he never says a word when he loses? You ever notice that? Just saying. Golden State also won last night to go up 1-0 in their series. But there was one gambler out in Las Vegas who put $50,000 on the Golden State Warriors to defeat Utah in that series. The odds on Golden State before the series started were minus 10,000. So he put up $50,000 to win $500. Now, he's probably going to get his $500. But there's no bet in the world worth putting up $50,000 to win $500. I'm sorry. He's going to win this bet, but that's still a bad bet. Minus 10,000 is your odds? That's terrible. But hey, he's going to collect his money sometime next week and laugh at people like me who say he's a fool. Playoffs continue tonight. Toronto and Cleveland will match up game 2 in Cleveland. News came out yesterday that Cleveland asked KG himself, Kevin Garnett, in the month of March to join the Cavs for their playoff run. Garnett probably smartly said no, but it'd be very interesting to see what Garnett would look like on the Cavs right now. Something tells me they'd be a lot more pissed off at the world. I know that for sure. Was there ever a more bitter NBA player than Kevin Garnett? I don't think so. But of course, Cleveland's coach yesterday, Tyronn Lue, said that coaching the Cavaliers is the toughest job in the entire NBA. Really? You think so? How about coaching the Sacramento Kings? How about coaching the Phoenix Suns or the Orlando Magic, where you have literally no chance to make the playoffs or win basketball games? Something tells me the people associated with these lousy NBA teams had to hear that quote from Tyronn Lue and just laugh in his face. Oh, Tyronn Lue, it's the toughest job in all of sports to coach the Cavs. Let's put you out in Sacramento next season. See how it goes for you out there. By the way, name one Sacramento Kings head coach in the last 15 years. You'll probably get George Karl, but it's tough to come up with another one, isn't it?
I got two words for you. Steve Nash and Chris Paul. Must-see TV.
That's more than two words.
You didn't say two words. You said quick to the point.
You just said I got two words. Steve Nash and Chris Paul. Must-see TV.
That's why I messed up, because I was trying to think of two words. I could have said that. Okay.
Two words.
Nash and Paul.
Game 2 tonight in San Antonio. The Spurs will look to come back against the Rockets, and they better, because if they go down 0-2 headed to Houston, that's not a spot they want to be in, especially with an aging team like the Spurs, who, as we talked about yesterday, have shown an inability to adapt to change. The NFL. Jamaal Charles, one of the best running backs in the NFL for this decade, is now a Denver Bronco, citing the fact that he always loved the Broncos and his hero growing up was John Elway. Really? You expect us to believe that? Here's what I believe. You're going to a team inside your own division and you want to stick it to the team that cut you, because you'll get to play the Chiefs twice a year if you play for Denver. Now, this is only a one-year contract, and let's just face it. Jamaal Charles is 31 years old, going in to quote-unquote compete for a job with C.J. Anderson, who's been their better running back the last couple of years. Don't forget, Jamaal Charles only had 12 carries all of last year, only averaged 3.3 a carry then. You're going to go into your fantasy draft this year, and you're going to look at Jamaal Charles, and you're going to remember the past. And you're going to remember his time with Kansas City when he was, at times, the best fantasy running back and even the best fantasy player in all of football. Don't remember those times, because someone is going to spend way too much at your fantasy draft on this guy, because let's just face it, he's done.
I'm a killer. I'm the dirtiest player in the game. I know one thing: win at all costs. Thousands of people saying, by God, that's why Rick Flair is the best.
Joe Mixon was a second-round draft pick of the Bengals this past weekend, and one TV station in Cincinnati is already forming a boycott against those Bengals. WCPO is simply not going to take it, and they're going to boycott the Bengals. Now, WCPO, what network are they affiliated with? ABC. How many times will the Bengals be on ABC this year? Zero. ABC is affiliated with Disney, which is also ESPN. So how many times will the Bengals be on ESPN this year? Once. Which means the other 15 games will be on every other network. Did you expect CBS, who shows a majority of the Bengal games, did you expect them to organize a boycott? No. Do you expect Fox or NBC, who will show a few Bengal games, do you expect them to organize a boycott? No. It's the channel affiliated with ABC, and ABC will show zero NFL games this year. What a shock. So the channel that will never have the Bengals on their airwaves this fall organizes a boycott against one of the players from the Bengals. And let's just face it, the number one rated show on four networks every year is NFL football. Something tells me this isn't all about domestic violence and a little bit about ratings. Just saying.
Cincinnati had not only lost another scoring opportunity, but they lost something just as important. Time.
Eli Manning is pissed. I can't believe it. The Giants went out and drafted Cal quarterback Davis Webb in the third round of the draft last weekend. And now Eli has been told by his coach, Ben McAdoo, don't focus on Davis Webb, your new backup quarterback. Focus on going out there and performing better. Oh, but you can't say that to Eli. You ever notice that the Manning boys have never been in a quarterback controversy? Why do you think that is? When Peyton Manning played for the Colts, who were his backup quarterbacks? You can't name them, can you? They were guys named Curtis Painter and Jim Sorgi. And when they were actually given a chance to play, when Peyton Manning was hurt or in the preseason or what have you, these guys proved to be the worst quarterbacks in the history of the world. Name backup quarterbacks for the Giants since Eli Manning's been there. You can't do it, can you? Eli Manning's first year, Kurt Warner was there, but they got him out of town quickly. But you can't name any backup quarterbacks for the Giants since Eli Manning has been there. Oh, people around here. Jerry Lorenzen. Okay, that doesn't count, and you know it. It's very ironic how the Manning boys have never had a worthwhile backup quarterback behind them. You ever notice that? Is that coincidence? No way. Because they're such big turds, they can't handle the fact that there might be a quarterback behind them that might actually have enough talent to pass them up. Remember when Aaron Rodgers got drafted by the Packers and Brett Favre didn't do one thing to help Aaron Rodgers whatsoever? I guarantee you, Eli Manning will be just as bad, if not worse, to this Davis Webb kid than Favre was to Aaron Rodgers. Now, the difference between Davis Webb and Aaron Rodgers is that Rodgers had a boatload more talent, allegedly. But don't look for Eli Manning to give any chances whatsoever to Davis Webb or any help whatsoever, because that's just who the Mannings are. But they fooled everybody for this long. Why can't they just keep fooling them? Some college football. Nick Saban got a 3-year extension on his contract and now will make over $11 million next year. How does this guy keep getting extensions? Where is he going? Unless he goes back to the NFL, what other college job would Nick Saban leave Alabama for? Seriously. Kentucky? Going back to LSU? How nice is it to be in Alabama? The outside linebackers coach got a raise to $950,000. The outside linebackers coach. What about the inside linebackers coach? How much money is he making? Man, being an assistant coach at Alabama must be great because Saban won't let you talk to the media, so you don't have to worry about that. And you can make close to $1 million. Outside linebackers coach makes almost $1 million. Man, I got into the wrong profession.
I don't know how else I can say it, guys. I've said it 3 different occasions. Well, then I guess I have to say it. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
I can't tell you how pleased and honored I am to be your coach at the University of Alabama.
We saw a video floating around the internet yesterday of a kicker from Florida named Eddie Pinheiro. And he kicked an 81-yard field goal in practice. Now, we don't know what the wind helped him. We don't know if it was photoshopped or whatever, but it looked like a legitimate kick. Let's see, a kicker from the University of Florida doing something miraculous. What number was he wearing in that jersey he was kicking in? 15. Who else from Florida football has worn number 15? Oh yeah, Tim Tebow. I think it's the jersey, ladies and gentlemen. It had to be something. An 81-yard field goal. By the way, these practice field goals of 81 yards, I'd like to see a coach have the cojones, or the cajones, as one of my friends would say. I'd like to see one of these coaches with the guts to try an 81-yard field goal in an actual game, first of all. And second of all, it's a little different when you've got the center hiking the ball back to the holder who's quickly got to get the ball down, and there's 11 people coming right at the kicker to try to block the kick. It's a little bit different scenario in practice when you've got a little T holding the ball perfectly for you and you can do it with it whatever you want. So I put no faith in these practice kicks. Much like when I saw Kyle Bowler several years ago throw the ball from the 50-yard line from his knees through the goalpost. Yippee! Let's see what you can do when you're facing a 6-man pass rush. And as you can see, when he got to the league, he could do nothing. But hey, throwing that ball that far from his knees got him into the NFL in the first round, and he got paid.
Anybody look good to Dundee? You ever seen his old lady? Woo! I want to tell you.
Tennessee quarterback, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing this, Sherryron Jones. Sherryron Jones. I don't know how to say it, and neither should you. He's only completed one pass in his entire career at Tennessee, but Tennessee career is over for the second time. As yesterday, he announced his transfer from Tennessee. The redshirt sophomore started at Tennessee, announced in January of 2016 that he was transferring to Colorado, took that transfer back, went back to Tennessee last year, and after this year's spring game, in which he's now apparently the third team quarterback, said, screw this, I'm out of here again, you can't stop me this time. My thing is this, with Mr. Jones, I can't pronounce his first name, so I'm not even going to try again. If you've already transferred out of the school once and you came back, how much faith do you think the coaching staff has in you? They're not going to let you start even if you're the best player on the team. They'll never let you play because you tried to show them up in their eyes. So you could have been the second coming of Doug Flutie back there for Tennessee. You could have been Heath Shuler or Tony Robinson. Not Andy Kelly. He was terrible. But anyway, any of those old-time Tennessee quarterbacks. Don't say Peyton Manning, because I'm already pissed off at Eli as it is. And there was no way that this kid was going to ever play quarterback again for Tennessee. So good luck to you, Sherryron Jones or Sherryron Jones. You're going to need it, because next year, you're going to be a junior. You're going to be a redshirt junior when you get back on the field, and it's not going to be pretty. And wherever you go, you're already facing an uphill battle again, because you've already tried to transfer twice. Decisions in life. Some of them haunt you forever, unfortunately.
I want winners.
Greed is good.
Cash, cold, that's what I need.
And now with this pick for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, smooth, Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver, yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, it's Mac Daddy Stogie time. We go back to the NBA, Toronto and Cleveland. Cleveland, a 7.5-point favorite tonight. They're 5-0 in the NBA postseason, and poor little Toronto has no chance against Cleveland, right? They lost the first game by 11 points. But we're on the Raptors tonight. NBA zigzag theory. Anytime a team loses straight up and against the spread in game one, and they're an underdog in game two, go with that underdog. We'll take Toronto getting 7.5, and if you wait closer to game time, you might get 8. The Raptors tonight getting points against Cleveland in game two of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Your Mac Daddy Stogie of the night. And you can take that to the desert and smoke it.
I think that possibly, if you change some of your habits, some of your methods of wrestling, if you used your left and right turn indicator in your car, it wouldn't be too late for you.
And that does it for the Wednesday, May the 3rd edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. We thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. Email anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And make sure to like us on Facebook, the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.